Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. I did my best to bake in the sun over the last couple days to even try and mimic the fact that I may or may not have been in Orlando, but alas, I'm still a pasty white nerd.
That's okay. I am also a pasty white nerd. I had so much suntan lotion on, it was insane. I was trying to be in the shade as much as possible. I was, you know, just, I got a little teeny tiny little bit on my shoulders, a little bit of sunburn on my shoulders where I was carrying a purse. And so I think the purse rubbed off some of the suntan lotion. So just kind of like where my purse straps were right around my tank top straps got a little bit burned. But other than that, I did not get burnt in Orlando, which is insane.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they get you, though, the purse straps. Not that I'm familiar. I can't speak.
I was going to say, that's always your problem, is your purse straps?
Oh, no, that's why I always travel with a fanny pack. Because is that what they call it still? I haven't seen one in a very long time. That I said the word, and I had to think for a second. Like, is that what they call it?
Yes.
Okay, good. It just sounds wrong when you think about it. Can you even buy fanny packs anymore?
Anyway, oh, I'm sure you can. The Walmart special, I think.
Is it? I'm going to go look and document the process. I'm not going to buy one, but I feel like wiser men need to know if there are fanny packs available. But why were you in Orlando, and why am I joking about being in Orlando? Because I was not in Orlando, sadly.
Yes, unfortunately, you could not make it. We are going to talk about it later in the episode, but we did have CreateCon this past weekend. It was a lot of fun. That is, for those of you who don't know, it is the kind of convention. It's the first year. It is the A-Move TV crew, and so we also brought some friends. So we had Justin Robert Young and Brian Brushwood and Tom Merritt were all there as well. So there were a couple of different kind of shows, but all centering around the A-Move family. So we had a really great time, and I will get into more of that later on, but it was really good to see everybody. These things always go by way too quickly, and I'm always super exhausted after the fact because it's like trying to cram work and vacation into one trip, and it was only a 5-day trip, and two of those days were travel days, so it was just like really super incredibly crazy. So, we're going to talk about that a little bit later on the show. Right now, we are going to talk about what we have been playing. And Ryan and I actually have played the same thing this past week. We played We Happy Few. And this is something that we saw at E3 and got really excited about. Mm-hmm. It is the kind of dystopian survival open world horror type game. And so the characters in We Happy Few, it's a dystopian 1960s England, kind of a what would have happened if Germany won the war. And so the people in the game aren't like zombies, but they will attack you if you don't kind of conform to their society. So, Ryan, how far did you get? Because we should also mention, and this I just think I didn't read enough about it, but it is actually early access, right? So this this isn't the full release of the game, which I thought it was the full release of the game. So that's totally on me. But
yeah, there's a lot about this game that a lot of folks probably saw at the Microsoft press conference. All they showed at the Microsoft press conference was the stellar intro to the game, which they are billing as the intro prologue. /prologue. Yeah, the story mode isn't in the game per se. It's early access. It's actually a survival games where you scrounge and craft and pull stuff together. There's a basic quest system, but really what a lot of gamers saw at E3 is a small sliver of what's actually available right now in the game. And I think the game will fully launch early 2017 with three characters and three stories, one story per character. So
yeah,
it's really misleading. It's kind of misleading, but it's also like, well, you're just going based off of what you saw at the Microsoft press conference. But really, when you go to buy the game, it's pretty apparent that this is not BioShock. This is, or at least isn't yet BioShock. And I don't know. I think in past episodes we've covered games like this, like the whole like open world survival mechanics, and I'm not a big fan of them because I always seem to play the game before it comes out. Like, I have yet to play a game that's 100% complete, except for, I guess, Don't Starve, which I love Don't Starve. And I've always played those games at a more complete moment, but it always feels we play these survival games and they're not done yet, and it just sucks.
Yeah, and I think that the difference, at least for me, about this survival game versus a lot of other survival games we've played, because we've played a lot of like post-apocalyptic zombie stuff, we played things like Ark, and for me, this one has enough story to it, even though it's still, they've said it's about 50% of the procedurally generated stuff is done, and that basically the entire game is probably somewhere between 20 and 30% done. So there's some big story chunks missing, but there's also some really cool like story lore Easter egg kind of things that you can find right now. And that's what I find is always my problem, is there's not enough of that. There's not enough of a driving force behind the story, because there basically is no story. It's like you have to survive and try to, you know, create a base in either a PvP or a PvE world, and it's starting with nothing and working your way to a castle, essentially. And that's never enough for me. I need more story. So this seems to be the answer to those kind of gamers, people who are like me that want some story in their open world survival, because there are quests. There are things that you need to go and do, or you can go and do, basically. And the whole idea is to survive in this dystopian future when you go off of your joy, which is the drug that you take to essentially forget the past and feel better, like euphoric sort of thing. And so it seems to be also some sort of a hallucinogenic, because the world that you're in, like we saw in the trailer in E3, they think that they're whacking a piñata and they're actually smashing a rat with a stick. So that's a pretty strong drug to make you just totally and completely see the world as half happy, fluffy rainbows, when in reality it is not.
Yeah, it's the setting is, and you know, I'm coming off a little negative here on the game, but I actually do appreciate the fact that it's one of my favorite sort of early access experiences with these types of games, because it's different. It's not just an island with dinosaurs and you have to craft and survive. This is more, you're right, there's a very deep story layer there that is very apparent. It's not just pick up text. There are quests, there are goals. I think the main goal is to get, like, progress to new environments by completing quests and collecting things, and it's exactly what I need in these types of games, which is more structure. That's my issue with these sort of open world construction games. It's that, like, you're making me think, not just making me think too much, but more just I don't want to have my own fun. I want the game to kind of like guide me in a specific way. And I feel like We Happy Few is doing that well in the small amount of time I played of it. But, I dig the setting. And did you actually take the joy at the beginning? Because if you take the joy at the beginning, the game just ends.
Does it really?
Yeah, like you get game over, and it's like, oh, well, I was a little surprised, but I was streaming it, and Vent said that, I guess if you take the joy, like you continue in that feedback loop of censoring things according to the company policy, and you don't get kicked out, and everything's just hunky-dory, and it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, so basically what happens is that you start the game in your office, and you're given the choice to either take your joy or to not take your joy and keep reading, because you get essentially triggered by a newspaper article about yourself and your brother. And so you start to have these flashback memories of your brother and what sounds like him potentially being taken from you. And so you get that kind of a, oh my god, what's going on feeling, and then you're presented the choice: take the joy and forget, or keep working. And so I guess if you take the joy, that's the end of the game, which kind of makes sense. Or you get to kind of keep investigating, and that kicks off you basically getting kicked off the Wellington Wells or something like that is the name of the town. And there's like a district where everyone is on their joy, and then there's the garden district, which is where you get kicked to, which is all the downers or the people who've gone off of their joy. So it's an interesting concept. I really enjoy it. I got stuck pretty much right away, because you get caught by the police, you get thrown into the garden, you end up in a safe house in a bunker, which is where you start. And I, unfortunately, crafted both my lockpicks and then destroyed them while trying to, because again, this is early access, so destroyed them while trying to actually equip them, because I had one slot that was open, one slot that was locked. I had a club or something in my open slot, and I tried to click and drag it to my other slot, and I think the game thought I was trying to delete it, but there was no, like, are you sure you want to drop it message? So I just, it just disappeared. And so I was looking all over the floor. I couldn't find it. And there are literally two metal scraps in the bunker that you can make two lockpicks with. And if you make both of them at the same time, they stack. And if you drag them out of your inventory, they're gone. So I had to restart the game. So fortunately, if you restart the game, you can restart it without actually going all the way back through the prologue.
Oh, cool.
So it gives you that option in your second playthrough that you can basically just start in the bunker. So at least even then, like, the prologue is literally 15 minutes long tops. And that's if you stop. Like, I stopped and worked in all of my coworkers' offices because I wanted to see all the newspapers. So.
Oh, really? And I didn't really hang around, but I feel like that intro piece is a good demo of what hopefully they're working on for the overarching story. Mm-hmm. And it feels like there's a bit of a disconnect to the end of the prologue and the beginning of the open world segment. Like, there's,
oh, for sure. Like they've said, like, there's
a zap of,
there are a ton of cinematics that are missing. Basically, mm-hmm. all the main story pieces outside of the prologue don't exist, and the prologue itself isn't even done. Mm-hmm. It's done to the point that you can have somewhat of a coherent introduction to the world and to the game. Obviously, that's what they wanted to show off at E3, so it's ahead of the game in terms of development. And so, yeah, there's no, because I said the same thing. You just kind of got dumped into this bunker, and I'm like, did the police bring me here? Did I escape? Like, what happened? Like, and then I realized that I was on the outside. I was in the garden, and because basically I think it's your boss who warns you. So, oh, you don't take your joy. You don't want to end up in the garden, do you? So it was an interesting experience. I liked it so far. And so my second playthrough, I actually got out of the bunker because I was like, okay, I know where all the things are. I collected all the things. I completed the quest of cleaning out the bunker. We'll just say that, cleaning out the bunker. And so I got outside very, very quickly because I already knew what to do. And I started to explore. So did you get a chance to actually explore the garden district that you're in?
I did. I went around a bit and I didn't feel like it, maybe I missed something, but I didn't feel like it kind of pointed me in a direction. It was sort of just like, you're there and you kind of have to gather your surroundings. But I started to explore and you start to understand that it's not like Ark or The Long Winter or whatever that game is called. The guys that show up, they're not as they feel antagonistic, but they're not really. They're just sort of there. They're stuck in the same situation as you are. They're downers, and you can talk to a few of them, and most of the time when you talk to them, they're just like randomly spewing lines, and you're doing the same, which is,
they're pretty canned responses, I think. Yeah,
it's again, early access, and I know a lot of folks, when they hear early access, this is a key example of early access. They're testing sort of the gameplay loop, and they're giving you a portion of the game, and it's very much a portion of the game, and that is very apparent when you go to talk to characters. But the quest systems are interesting. You got to go around, and there's like little things you come across. I had a spear, and then I stabbed a guy in the face because I thought they were all bad people. Turns out they were super nice. I just happened to shove a spear in their face, and they did not appreciate that. But then I came across like some folks that had like were vandalizing a water pipe or something, and you had to stop them and then try to fix it. And I feel like by going through that questing, that will progress the story. And I like the fact that they're presenting this sort of building blocks to get you to go to the next segment where you don't have to like trial and error it. But I like what's there. I want to maybe test it out again in a couple months because obviously this is a work in progress. I'd like to give it maybe another fair shake because I feel like I gave it about an hour and I was streaming it at the time during our game night slot, and I have to hand it to streamers, Jocelyn, yourself included. Streaming is difficult, especially when you do not do it on a weekly basis. Like, I had jumped back in. I can't remember the last time I streamed something. I mean, I had streamed the show the night before. But that's a little different from streaming gameplay, I think.
Oh, for sure.
It's a little easier in the sense that it's just it's not easier, but it's less CPU intensive, I guess we'll say. Mm-hmm. And We Happy Few, as well as and then we played another early access title after that, both did not really cooperate. So we didn't stay long. I'd like to give it another shot, but I ended the stream by just running around punching people. People also don't respond well to that.
I was going to tell a story where I thought I was going to sound like a bad person.
No, but don't worry.
I think Ryan has just proven that he is the worst of the two of us. So
I think I've proven that whenever we play these type of open world survival games, I get frustrated and want to quit, and I quit by just ruining my entire experience and save by punching everybody or everything for that matter. I'll probably have to start over. So that's fine.
I got to the point where I tried to cross the bridge and you had to talk to the police officer and he essentially asks you for a password. And
oh, you got so far you, then. Wow.
Huh?
You got far. I think that's like literally like how you progress to the next area.
It is. Yeah. Because you're trying to get back into the area where all the joy people are. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Because, and I'm not 100% sure, but basically escape the garden is the first goal.
Yes.
I can't remember exactly what the full goal of the game is. I think it's like you're trying to get out of your town because you're convinced that the whole world can't be like this, you know? Like you're convinced that everyone in the world can't be on joy. There's got to be a place where all the normal people are. So you're trying to find the normal people. At least that's kind of what the basic understanding that I have of the story arc. So the first step to that is getting back to where you were. And so you have to get out of the garden. You have to cross the bridge. So I talked to the police officer and he says basically, well, if you actually aren't a downer, then that means that you played, and I can't remember what game it was, but like, let's just say bingo. You played bingo on Thursday. So who won bingo? And so you have to go and try to find somebody who remembers. So who was off their joy and remembers who won bingo, so that you can get through across the bridge. Okay. So
is it like a dialogue choice, or does your character just have to know that?
No, you have to know that. So you have to go interact with people around you. And so there was this guy that came up to me. Most people just have like a talk option to interact with them. But this guy had give gift bandage. And so I was like, okay, cool. So I went around and I found all of the stuff that I needed to craft a bandage. And then I went to give it to him and it was still flashing red. And I was like, well, what the heck, game? Like, I have the thing and it says give gift. Like, why is it still flashing red? And then I had this thought pop into my head and I was like, well, maybe it's because he doesn't actually need a bandage yet. So maybe I have to make him need a bandage.
Oh no.
So then
where'd you stab him?
To punch him in the face. And then he like fell to the ground, started crying, and like ran away. I was like, huh.
Wow.
Whoops.
Like at least I was hitting people that didn't need a bandage. Like you were hitting someone who clearly had already been hurt. Maybe even emotionally and physically.
Yeah, I'm a terrible person. And so that's pretty much where I left it, because then I couldn't actually figure out who it was. But I did explore enough of the garden to discover a couple of different side quests. And it's really interesting because they actually give you a quest log that says, like, this is your main quest and here are all the side quests. These are all the optional things that you can do. Nice. So one of them, for instance, there was like a starting line with penance above it, and there was this guy who was running like ridiculously fast, and he just kept going around and around and around and around and around. And so you say to yourself, how does he have so much energy? This is ridiculous. And then a quest pops up that says incapacitate the runner. I'm like, okay.
that guy you had to punch.
Yeah, so I didn't actually do it because it was late enough in the day, because there are things that you have to manage. So you have to manage your sleep levels, your food, your health, your water.
Yeah. I don't know
what else? There's also like if you eat rotten food, then you can make yourself sick. So then you have to find basically like anti-nausea pills.
Right.
So there's a few different things to manage, but it's not crazy. Like it's not even as crazy as the original Sims game was. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think there's four, maybe five things that you have to manage. So by the time it starts to get later on in the day, then you have to go back to your bunker and you have to sleep. So you can essentially just survive. Mm-hmm. But if you don't go back into the area that you originally came from, you're going to run out of food, because even though it's so this is a really cool thing, okay, is it is a roguelike title. So each time you start over, you have things in your personal safe in your original garden bunker, but the world around you is completely procedurally generated. So the layout of buildings and the streets and the people and everything else will be all randomly procedurally generated around you. So mm-hmm. you're never going to learn the layout of the world, which I think is pretty cool.
It changes every time you start a new game, right?
Not yes.
Okay. Yeah. So when I boot the game back up and not load the save where I punched everyone, I should be able to be in a new city and experience a new layout, which is great, yeah, because I mean, I didn't experience much of the old layout, what with punching everybody, but
well, and I think there are some certain things that will always be the same. For instance, sure, right outside of your bunker will always be the same. That first water fountain that you come to will always be there. Like, they give you your basic building blocks right around your starting area, but everything else is different.
And how did you feel about the mechanics, like the typical mechanics of survival games where you're managing your hunger, your water, your thirst, your health, yada, yada, yada. Like, I've kind of felt like that moved pretty quickly in terms of you would get thirsty really quick and get, I always find food is the hardest stuff to come by. There was tons of water around because there was literally like water pumps you could go drink from. Did you have any issues with sort of the survival mechanics, or did you always have food?
I only lived, or like, I stopped playing after day 4, maybe, was the longest that I actually stayed in the game, and I hadn't starved by then. So I had, I think, jerky they give you at the start of the game. I scavenged a couple of rotten apples, so I had to eat a couple of rotten apples. But then I also happened to have the pills that I needed to get rid of the vomiting. So, right, you know, I always seemed to, I wasn't starving, but that was only day 4. I think if I had a better handle on the mechanics in general, I probably could have made it across the bridge by then. But like I say, my first time through, I accidentally deleted all my lockpicks. And then the next time through, I couldn't figure out how to actually gift the guy the bandage. So I think there are still... With my fist. I said, hey, dude, here's a bandage. And it didn't work. I don't know why. So
you put the Band-Aid on the end of your fist, sticky part out. And yeah, just keep shoving it in his face. And eventually it's going to stick. Yeah.
Either by adhesive or by blood.
Yeah, apply directly to the forehead. Apply directly to the forehead.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't seem to have any survival issues.
Okay. Because you didn't survive long enough. You had the same issue I did.
Well, yeah. I didn't play long enough, essentially, to hit any survival issues. So I could have made it long enough that I would have made it across the bridge. And once you make it across the bridge, then all the resources are much more plentiful. But the caveat to that is, in order to get the resources, you're going to have to do things that you wouldn't normally do if you were actually on your joy. So then you get the attention of people and they chase you and you have to, you know, then it's that kind of survival. You're turning the people who are friendly mobs into unfriendly mobs and you have to deal with that. So it becomes kind of a stealth type theft game, and it seems to be a lot of really cool different concepts rolled into one larger survival concept. Right. So I'm really enjoying it so far. I'm going to play a lot more of it. I love the creepy skin on the universe. I love it.
Yeah, there's some creepy skin on the people too.
Oh, yes.
if you notice. I'm looking forward to following the game. I want to see what they add to it. And really, between now and early 2017, that's not a whole lot of time to add stuff. So I would think if they're going to get this game out polished, 100% done for 2017, you're probably looking at a sweet clip with updates. So, yeah, I'll be following it over the next couple months to see where it goes and what they add to it. And I could see them adding large swaths of content between now and its launch in early 2017. So I'm excited.
This is one of the first games that I've been really excited about and really active in a kind of alpha, early access, beta type phase. Like, I'm really looking forward to actually testing the game and trying it out and finding the bugs and helping them fix it, because I want this to be successful, because I want more of this. I want them to add, you know, future DLC stories. And like, right now you play as one character, there's going to be three on launch. Like, I want to have many different characters to play. And I feel like the only way for that kind of thing to happen is if there's community support at the beginning. So I'm really excited to be part of that community, because this is right up my alley. It's got the 1960s sort of alternate history dystopian stuff. It's got stuff that looks like it's got a very Bioshocky feel to it. There's a little element of horror. It's just, it really feels like this game just has my name all over it. So yeah. I'm excited. I really, really liked it. And like I say, this is still early access. I only played a few hours of it. I just can't wait to get back in there.
Well, you know, when you're in Montreal for, was it DreamHack?
DreamHack, yeah. Yeah.
Well, they're in Montreal. So you could even like just go, how's it going, guys? Don't do that.
Go knock on some doors.
Yeah, just go door to door. It's funny, when I was in Montreal, I actually like Googled, I wonder where the Ubisoft like studios are. Of course, I wasn't actually going to go. I was just curious, right? And Montreal's a big place, it turns out. And tough to walk from downtown Montreal to, I think, the northern sector of the town where more of the industrial stuff is. But yeah, interesting stuff. I'm glad that you got a chance to check it out, because I meant to actually, after I played it, actually reach out and say, like, oh man, this game is out. We need to actually play it, because we're both really excited about it after E3. And I'm more excited about what's to come with the game. I like this base. But it's hard to recommend right now for me. It's just, there's not a lot there.
I think the total opposite. I think everyone should go play it. I think it's great.
Well, you know what? I'll meet you halfway.
Knowing that it is early access and there are bugs, but I would say if you run into a bug, just go, oh, early access, and put it in the forums.
Right, but that's $30. Like, it depends. Like, you kind of have to, first of all, you have to really enjoy these open world survival games, and knowing that this is probably one that has a lot of the more shortcut type stuff, like the quest system is really great, the listing of quests is really awesome, the environments are really cool. It's not as like drop you in and you're off on your own kind of thing. It's a little more guided experience, but it is a $30 game. But if you do want to try it and you have an Xbox One, they have all their early access stuff on Xbox One is a 30-minute demo, so you can go in, check it out, try it, and then if you enjoy it and want to keep playing, then you can drop your hard-earned cash on it. But I think eventually, like very soon, it will be at a point where it'll be easier to recommend. But right now, it's very early. And if you were really drawn to it based on the Microsoft press conference, you just got to understand that that's a portion of the game where more is coming soon. Right now, a majority of it is that open world survival game. And that's not me coming at it like, oh, I thought it was going to be this.
It's a good disclaimer.
It's good to remember, because it is an it's
the story stuff is going to be the last thing that they skin over top of what got existing. So that obviously is the big thing that they're missing right now. But one game, another open world game that does have a bit of a story is Far Cry Primal. We talked about it a little bit when I originally picked it up and started playing it earlier on this year. But Ryan, you've had your hands on it now. So what do you think about Far Cry Primal?
Yeah, I did this weird thing where I went outside in public and went to an EB Games and went without
what?
The... Yeah, I know. And I, you know, we don't often talk about going out into the real world and purchasing video games these days, which is weird. Like, I went from a point where I was only buying physical copies, then going digital. But we went to EB. A friend of mine wanted to buy a game. He wanted to get Battlefront on the cheap. So I was like, yeah, we'll go to EB. I'll come with you. I like looking around. And I had Caden with me. We were kind of just going around the store. I picked up a few amiibos. I did not buy them. Stay strong.
you just picked them up and held them and looked at them and put them back?
Yeah. Yeah,
I call shenanigans.
Isn't that what a kid does in a toy store, hoping like maybe someone will notice? Like, no. I did not buy them, but I did on the way out. I saw that there was this like they usually have these deals on pre-owned games, and one of them was Far Cry Primal. I was like, I'll ring it up and see how much it is, and I ended up getting it for like $40 with tax, which is like half price here in Canada, which is pretty good. Anyways, I am all in, and I've been playing Far Cry 4. I actually had it in a box since I bought it on Boxing Day a few years ago, and I'm like, I better open this up and at least try it. And it's a little bit more of the same. Like, I remember playing a lot of Far Cry 3, and it's more of that, you know, with the guns and the open world flying and all that fun business, the quirky characters. So then I remember always wanting to try Far Cry Primal, in which I booted it up and started playing it, and I love it. It's just different. It's mm-hmm. it's different from Far Cry 4 in the sense that it's still open world. I actually think there was an article about it using the same map layout, but besides that, it's open world. All the weapons are Stone Age based. It's set in the Stone Age, which is great. There's no like English in the game except for I think the intro, in which there's a little bit of like dialogue, but the whole game is all subtitled.
That's like that's a voiceover, I think.
Oh right, yeah, you're right. And yeah, it's just it's a, and I've always said on the show, I appreciate different experiences, and it's really great to see Ubisoft put down the hordes of guns, the quirky characters, the stupid dialogue that's supposed to be funny, and do this experimentation of a game that is a open world game set in the Stone Age with harpoons, bows and arrows, clubs, weird cannibal dudes. It's just really refreshing in a way, and I'm just having a blast running around as a caveman and just screwing things up, you know, like using my owl buddy to take out people's eyes, and I have a wolf who I like don't want to get rid of. He's like the best, and yeah, I'm having a blast with it. I think I'm like 10 hours in. I've been playing a lot of it over the weekend whenever I get a chance.
I feel like that's about how far I got, about 10 hours into it, and I was really enjoying it too. It's one of those things where it's just so overwhelming, and we just got finished talking about one open world game. Now we're talking about another one.
Yeah.
But it just, and is partly what scares me a little bit about Zelda, is just that these open world experiences, it's so easy to go, there's so much more game for me to explore, but I just don't have the time. So in Far Cry Primal's case, there was nothing wrong with the game. I was having a really good time. Some other title just came up, and to be honest, I can't even remember what it was. It might have been Hearthstone. Like,
Oh, right, when you were playing Far Cry Primal.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was that pulled me away from it. I just know that there was something that I decided to play outside of actual Far Cry Primal. Not that there's anything wrong with the game. I really enjoyed it.
It's the open world syndrome in that it comes out, and like right now is kind of probably a poor time to be playing Far Cry Primal and picking it up and really diving in, and because, you know, next week is No Man's Sky. No Man's Sky comes out next Tuesday, and I am interested in that title. And then a week later, you've got Deus Ex Mankind Divided. Then a week later, you've got the behemoth in the room, which is Legion, and it just gets worse and worse from there. And I totally get it.
Speaking of Legion,
what happened, Legion?
Have played so much Warcraft in the last couple days because I wanted just like a sit down, do nothing type of a title.
Maybe it was Warcraft. Who knows?
I leveled my druid from 90 to 98, and I leveled my priest from 90 to 92. So I did a lot of leveling, and it was so good. Because actually, right now is a really, really great time if you're looking to get back into it, because since they just totally reshuffled all the talents and recreated a lot of the classes, now it's just like everyone doesn't know what they're doing. So it just feels like a really good time to get in there and touch some of the classes that you may not have touched previously, right, and to also use the boost, because that was the reason, like, my druid was a boosted character, and I just felt like druid was so confusing. I was like, okay, I want to play feral, which is the cat, but for some reason, even though I'm a cat, I can still be a moonkin or a bear or a, you know, like or my normal like person tauren form. And I just was so confused because I had no idea what was going on with my druid. And now, since everything just got totally redone, there's a whole bunch of brand new guides that I was able to find that were like, okay, so here's all the changes, and this is what you should be doing, and this is how everything works. And I'm like, oh my god, this was missing when I first boosted this to 90. So it was really, really, really fun. And so I had a great time playing my druid. Matt is also leveling up a warlock. He had a warlock at level 80, and he's now probably halfway through the Draenor content.
That's suspect, because I remember talking to Matt and saying, will you ever play WoW again? And He says never, ever, 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 ever. So it's really, it shows, I mean, you probably convinced him to start playing, let's be honest. Like, that's what happened, right?
I really didn't.
You didn't?
I was laying on the couch after we got home on Monday. I was laying on the couch and I was watching, I think I watched some Pokemon and then I watched some Breaking Bad, and I'm laying on the couch and I was getting all ticked off at him because he was just sitting at the computer, and I was like, I thought we were going to hang out tonight. We like had a whole like 5 days where we barely spent any time together because we were with so many other people.
Right.
And so then he's just like, well, you know, I resubbed and I was, you know, figuring things out, and I thought you'd want to like play Warcraft with me because you play Warcraft all the time. And I was like, damn it! He just had to be over there doing something sweet and nice, right?
so what you're saying is I'm not trying to be rude, right? I just remember, like, I lived with WoW playing Matt for 2 years, and it was some fun times, and I have some stories, but I won't tell them here on this podcast.
I think it's because when we were down at CreateCon, we played World of Warcraft Trivial Pursuit. And he didn't play. He was like the game master. And I think he realized how little he knew. And he was not comfortable with that. Oh. So,
well, he was a really good WoW player. He was kind of the WoW player in college and university. And I remember like going to him, like, okay, so like, what do I need to do for this character? What are we doing for this raid? Like, what's this dungeon? And, you know, we went to midnight launches for Wrath of Lich King at a physical EB Games location, stood in line at midnight. It was great. He had, like, a warrior. He was, like, the highest tier warrior on the server, I think, at one point. Like, he was rocking it. So it's great to see him back in. And funny, I think WoW just is never done with you, because actually both my roommate Matts started playing WoW again before I even got back into it this year. I'm still looking to get back into it, but
you should.
I will, and like, that's the
in
thing
the next
is,
like week or so, because the pre-launch event thing is ramping up. I think you can start playing Demon Hunters on the 9th, so in just under a week. And so with the Demon Hunters, even if you don't want to play a Demon Hunter, with the Demon Hunters comes all of the, you know, story stuff in the pre-launch event. So
when it comes, this is something I'm curious about. So we mentioned the 9th. You mentioned the 9th, the pre-Legion play as the Demon Hunters, and then the 9th is also No Man's Sky. I took the 9th off. So here's the question. What do I do? Do I start a Demon... Is that Demon Hunter going to be like the 90 to 100 Demon Hunter content? Is that what that is? Or do you just literally start a Demon Hunter and he spawns in Azeroth?
Well, the Demon Hunters do... They're a hero class like Death Knights are. So they will start... I don't know 100% actually where they start.
I thought possibly they had like a starting Crusade area.
Their starting area is probably Burning Crusade, but anyways,
they have like a,
honestly,
like,
I don't know, because I've been avoiding spoilers, so I really don't know, but they will have a starting area, they will, you know, all that kind of stuff. So Hachikumo in the chat room, and if you're curious, we do have a live chat room going on to twitch.tv/amovetv starting at 8 p.m. every Wednesday night. But Hachikumo in the live chat room says that Demon Hunters are starting at 70, we assume.
DH starts at 98, Jim's saying.
Oh.
I just searched Demon Hunter. It did not bring up the content I wanted. I remember reading a little bit about it. I'm just curious if they would launch that portion of the... Obviously, you have to have pre-ordered the content. You have to own it. You have to have an active subscription. I'm just curious if it starts at the point where you would start a Demon Hunter in Legion. I think it would. It's not just going to say, like, hey, you can now play the Demon Hunter, but you don't get to experience the story until you re-roll that Demon Hunter. That'd be really weird.
Bentigo is saying that there's a starting zone, and so you're going to be about level 100 after you finish the prequel content.
Okay, so now Josh is saying DH starts when you play No Man's Sky. I shouldn't do both. I mean, we both know that, like, I will definitely be tempted to do both. And theoretically, like, if Demon Hunters didn't start on the 9th, I'm just curious if I should just wait until the 30th to actually play. Also, you know what? The servers are going to be smashed on the 9th. Maybe, although the servers will be smashed with No Man's Sky too. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll just play my Game Boy.
The thing is, like I said, they did change a lot about a lot of different classes. So even if you're not planning on starting in Demon Hunter, you should go in now just to kind of do your... clean out your bags, get your bars done, like read all your spells and figure out your rotations. That's a really good kind of maintenance thing that you could go in and do right now before actually the content becomes available on the 30th. So,
well, we talked about, I have a boost available to 90, and we talked about what class I should start and level through, I guess, level through Draenor. It's too late. Maybe I should just pre-order and then boost them to 100. But it was the Shadow Priest, I think people were talking about, that I should. I've never played a priest before, but I'm tempted.
Leveling through Draenor is so freaking easy now.
Is it? But is it like easy as in like 3 weeks? There's a lot of other stuff I should be doing, but I kind of want to play WoW. Like that kind of easy?
Well, I leveled from 90 to 98 yesterday.
Really?
So,
like yesterday is in like what, 10 hours or?
No, probably like 5, maybe 6.
That's pretty good. That's like a good weekend like so chunk
you
of
can,
time.
Yeah, you can actually buy a potion in your garrison using garrison resources. So you can buy a potion for 100 resources that for 1 hour will give you 20% more experience for quests. Mm-hmm. So it's between that and my rested XP, and there are a couple of like buildings that give you bonuses, like the one of the buildings that you build in your outpost in Spires, I think. If you make a tavern, you get another 20% boost in experience in that zone. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, everything just is like get through, get max level. So it's it's easy. Easier, okay. Anyways. And even then, like, I remember the leveling experience wasn't that terrible before, but it's just like the problem with every WoW expansion is that there's a very kind of linear path to the zones. Mm-hmm. The great thing, and the reason I love leveling 1 to 60, is because you can take, you know, the Kalimdor route or the Eastern Kingdoms route, and you have a few different ways that you can go, and it feels like a bigger world. But then as soon as you hit, like, Burning Crusade or Wrath of the Lich King, there's a couple of places where you can kind of deviate, but it's still, for the most part, really linear, and there's, like... Yeah. One zone, actually, Lich King had two starting zones. That's true. But anyways, in Draenor, you basically, like, you have to go through Frostfire Ridge, and then you have to go to Gorgoron for a bit, and then you have to go to Talador, and it's just really linear, so you don't get the variety that makes leveling an alt kind of interesting, but you can buy those potions that make everything go faster. And I did it totally through questing. I didn't do it through dungeons because I was learning, and I had no idea what the hell I was doing. Yeah. As a druid, so
I think, you know, I might be at a point where maybe once Legion drops, that's when I boost a character, like after I've leveled a character to 110 or whatever the new max is, then I use my 90 boost on something that I want to.
Still haven't used your 90 boost?
No, see, yeah, I picked up the game, I started playing when the expansion came out, and then dropped it like a hot potato, like, because I'm always looking for something else to play. Like, I find WoW just doesn't hold my attention as much as it used to, and I'm sure Legion will be the same way, and that's fine. That's how I'm going to play it, but I've played a Warlock for 8 years because that's how I've played, and I think it's high time that I, you know...
Well, yeah, Priest
check out the grass on the other side.
Would be similar, but if you're looking for something totally different, then there's still... You could play a hunter, a survival hunter, and use a staff and traps. How cool is that?
Sweet, that is pretty... Is that what you're doing?
No, actually.
I thought you were a hunter.
I am, but I'm doing marksman, so I still have a bow.
So I could be like a cool like staff person. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah. So lots of different options. Anyways, we totally went off on a Warcraft tangent. I did not mean to.
Yeah.
We do have one more Blizzard game to talk about. And the Blizzard game that we are going to talk about is Overwatch, because they are doing a Summer Games from now until August 22nd. Yeah. And that is a special event, which comes with different loot boxes and a whole bunch of kind of new skins and sprays and, I guess, animations, emotes, all that kind of stuff, as well as a new brawl, which is what, I guess, Ryan, I hope you got more into this than I did.
Yeah.
But Lucio Ball is actually live now, and it is essentially Rocket League in Overwatch.
A very interesting take on Rocket League. It's not like Rocket League is this very... The reason Rocket League works so well is that it's very tight. It works super great. The controls feel amazing. The ball goes where you want it to, which is the complete opposite in Lucio Ball.
Yes.
And that the thing about Lucio Ball is it's not meant to be Rocket League. It's meant to be just this fun, cool distraction that's themed around the Olympics that'll be around for two, 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I think it succeeds in that fashion. But you play one match and you're like, okay, this is really neat. And then you continue to play and you start to realize like, oh, I don't quite have the control over the ball that I want, as you would expect. Like it kind of, you'll like hit it with your shockwave and it'll go sideways instead of forward. And that's a little frustrating.
Yeah, and I think that, again, that just comes down to weapon accuracy and learning how the physics in that specific arena work. There's also, if you skate up the wall, then the wall makes you actually go faster, which is really funny because the first thing I did was drive up on the wall in Rocket League, and I didn't leave the ground in Lucio Ball. So, but apparently, if you drive up on the walls, it makes you go faster. Those big kind of orange plates on the ground are kind of like jump plates. So if you jump on them, they boost you and make you jump higher. So I think that there is much very similar to Rocket League. Those who get the hang of it and know how to play it, there's going to be a whole different game that's going to occur because of the, you know, extra things that you can do within that arena. They have modified Lucio's controls a little bit, so he no longer has the ability to switch to heal because you can't actually damage anyone. So the whole point is just using your secondary fire to actually hit the ball, and your alt, when you get it, it actually pulls the ball into you as opposed to pushing it away or giving your allies shields or whatever. So I think once people kind of get the hang of it, it will be more like Rocket League, in that there's going to be the people like you and I, Ryan, who just go in there and, you know, don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And stay on the floor and just try to get whatever bonuses you get. Do you even get anything? I guess you get XP. But
it's like the Brawls. You get some XP, and I think it's more just quirky fun. I actually appreciate the fact that this is a Brawl that isn't just like, I don't know, you're all Anna type characters because Anna's new and we want everyone to try her not in quick play, and that's fine too. And I like the experimentation with Brawl, but I also like to see the fact that they're creating a whole new game mode for the quirky side selection for quick play, right? And it's awesome that they've done this. This obviously took some work, and it's themed, and I want to see
there's
more
a whole
of
new
this.
Arena like yeah. This is a whole new venue, which is cool.
You know, they'll never be able to use until, I don't know, maybe they'll add Lucio Ball as an ongoing
feature. I was
going
to say, I would feel like they put enough work into this that it's probably going to make the normal rotation through the Brawls.
Yeah.
Because I think they cycle through. Brawl is a mode that I don't pay any attention to at all. I just play quick play, so I don't actually know, but I would assume that they rotate through either ideas with different characters or whatever. But I would say that this is probably the intention of Lucio Ball is to go into the regular rotation of Brawls.
I hope so, because again, it's a neat distraction from a game that benefits from neat distractions, because eventually you start to realize that the game is it's got a finite amount of content, just like every other game out there. But when the only thing you're doing in Overwatch is quick play, then stuff starts to come up a lot. And and I'm just appreciate the fact, like, if they're going to get a new event in here every couple months that brings me back to Overwatch, I think that's awesome. How do you feel about the skins? Some of the skins that they're offering, which are exclusive to paid summer loot boxes that, my understanding, don't include just the summer content?
Well, okay, so from what I understand, they're... Any time that you get a loot box, so whether you purchase it, whether it comes from leveling up, doesn't matter. Whenever you get a loot box from now until August 22nd, it will be skinned as the Summer Games. It's a Summer Game loot box, and you are guaranteed to get at least one item in your loot box from the Summer Games. You can't buy any of them with in-game currency, and I think that that's where the kind of the controversy is, because if there's one specific skin you want, like, say, I think there's a Genji skin that's Japanese-themed, and because a lot of these have, basically, a lot of these characters are representing their country, like, shoot, I can't remember her name now, but the big Russian, she's got this
Zarya.
Zarya, yeah, she's got this red suit on with like yellow sickles and stuff, and
Oh, yeah, like McCree has his the American flag. Oh my god,
the McCree skin is so good.
Tracer track and field, it looks amazing. Mercy with Swiss colors. Mm-hmm. Toblerone with his Swedish outfit. Yeah. It's just, those skins look amazing.
Yeah, so if you say, for instance, want the American McCree skin, then the only way to get it is to open enough loot boxes that you randomly luck into it. So that's what a lot of people are ticked off about, because mm-hmm. you can't actually go buy it with in-game currency, which means you just have to buy or like put a ton of money into this event and hope that you get lucky. And I don't know exactly, like, I don't know how many you'd have to buy, how many loot boxes you'd have to buy in order to essentially get every single Summer Olympic thing, whether they're sprays, skins, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's a lot. If you're only ever guaranteed, you're guaranteed one, but it could be all four, but you're definitely guaranteed one Summer Olympic item. So then to go from there to say like you're guaranteed one out of four, so 25% of your loot box is going to be a summer thing. And I think they said there's over 100 items.
Yeah.
So you have to have like 100 loot boxes if you got really unlucky and only ever got one item. But then like duplicates get turned into currency, but you can't turn that around and use it. Like that's weird.
Yeah. And Josh in the chat room is talking about Smite. They do have that chest system where it's like, here's our summer chest but it's usually one exclusive item that you can get out of there, if I remember correctly.
It's not necessarily one, but I think the most that I've ever seen that is actually exclusive to the chest is, I believe, about 5 or 6
skins. Okay, yeah.
But those 5 or 6 skins, in some cases, were like old content that they might have given out at conventions, and then the only way to get it was to go to a convention before anyone even knew what Smite was, so they throw it into a chest. But
it's still like 6 items, no duplicates. To lock,
yes, exactly. And that's the thing. Once you get the item, then you can't open it again. Whereas in Overwatch, there's no guarantee. There's 100 items that are exclusive to these summer game crates. So the Olympic boxes, there's not like a set amount of things in them. You know, like you're not only going to get Olympic content. And Smite, once you've opened something, you can no longer get it again. This one, the Olympic boxes, you can just get over and over and over again, all the same items. Plus, you're also pulling from the classic items as well. It's very money grabby, and it's really unfortunate that you can't purchase things for in-game currency. Like, I don't know why they made that. Well, I know why they made that decision, because they're going to make a shit ton of money, but I'm very disappointed in the decision, that's for sure.
I think you can't buy money in Overwatch, right? So I think you should be able to.
Right. You can buy loot boxes, and then your duplicate items turn into in-game currency.
Yeah. And this is the thing, is I think in Overwatch, they're close. They're close with their model. And this is all an experiment. And maybe for their Halloween event, they'll do the same thing, but then they'll allow you to buy the skins with your gold. Because here's the thing. I like the idea of summer or specific themed loot boxes that I can choose to buy or choose to earn through gameplay. It makes me want to play the game more so I can get like the Tracer skin and the D.Va skin and so on and so forth. But I'm a busy guy. I know a lot of other people who play this game who are busy people, and it would be nice to know that, hey, I've saved up 1,000 gold. I can use that 1,000 gold to get my Zarya skin, you know, mm-hmm. if for some reason I just didn't happen to get one of the 100 items I wanted from the loot crates that I get probably every, I don't know, like I played the last 2 days for a little bit, and I'd play a couple matches then jump out, and I think I've gained like one level in that time, and I'm level 20. See, and then
this is the other issue, and this is the issue that I've had with the reward system since Overwatch launched, is that you're looking at a system where it gets harder and harder to level up because it takes more and more XP every time, so you're playing more and more games in between your levels. So you can get level like 1 to 7 in an evening, and then before you know it, it's taking you 2 evenings to just gain one level.
Right.
So it becomes harder and harder and harder to get loot boxes. So a lot of people that are going to be really excited about this event aren't actually going to get loot boxes from leveling, or if they do, they'll only get a few, versus new players are going to get a whole ton of them. And, you're going to have to buy loot boxes in order to have a really good shot at this content. And so they're punishing people the higher level they get, which is like the total opposite of what you want to do. You want people to keep playing your game, and you're punishing them because their levels are so high. So yeah. And it's so weird. It's good that it's not like a random, the absolute worst case scenario in this whole entire thing would be if it was a random loot box. Like you could get a classic or you could get a Summer Olympic. At least we know every single loot box that you get one way or another until August 22nd is going to be a Summer Olympic box. But like, it's going to be so hard for me. I might, if I play a few hours a night, mm-hmm. I might get 10 loot boxes between now and the 22nd. Just through leveling.
Which is a chance to get...
That doesn't feel good.
That's not even half. Like, if you got a new item just from the Olympics section, that's not even half of the items that they've added to the game. Mm-hmm. And they give you a free box when you join the game after this patch. And all of the items I got were a profile icon and tags. Not even, like, a guaranteed skin in your first box, which I would think missed opportunity to get you to want to... keep going. And but then on the other side of things, it's like, you know, if they're gonna add like a fresh load of boxes every couple months, I wouldn't be opposed to start like dropping like $5, but only if they make the system a little better where I know I'm only gonna get summer stuff in these mm-hmm. crates. I don't understand why they're saying like you're guaranteed at least one summer item as if it's like this cool bonus feature. It's like, no, mm-hmm. I want just the new stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's like in Hearthstone. Like, imagine if they added new expansions. Like, well, when you buy the Goblin packs, you get classic cards, too. And it's like, isn't that great, everybody? Like,
I can't even explain the amount of outrage that... Because I drew the exact same comparison, and I find I talk about Hearthstone too much, so I didn't want to be the one to bring it up.
But you didn't even tell me about it beforehand.
Can you even imagine the outrage if Hearthstone pulled this shit? It would literally be... people freaking out because they're already upset that your arena reward is random because you can randomly get a pack. Can you imagine if you just bought packs and they were like the Whispers of the Old Gods? All packs are now Whispers of the Old Gods, but there's a chance that you're going to get classic cards and GVG cards and like all of these cards mixed in, but one of the five is guaranteed to be from Whispers. Oh my god.
Yeah, I mean the wording, it's like that's a good feature. And I mean the classic loot boxes have been around since launch. I think it's fine to segregate your purchasing options for mm-hmm. 3 weeks. It won't kill you, Blizzard, to allow us to purchase and understand that those boxes are going to contain new items only.
Yeah, even if they did it somewhat like there's only one bundle. So if you want to buy the Summer Olympics, you have to buy them in packs of, say, 50 loot boxes. It costs you $40. Mm-hmm. That's the Summer Olympic bundle. And then if you want to buy normal loot boxes, then they have them in the $1.99, $3.99, $7.99, $10.99, whatever the intervals are. But basically, like they say, like, here's our normal store. Now there's a bonus. You can buy a chunk of Summer Olympic loot boxes that only have Summer Olympic items. But again, that is the consumer-facing model, not the business-facing model, where, you know, like, who's your priority, your consumer or your business? And this is clearly a business decision.
But yeah, it's just, it's so typically not Blizzard, it feels like. Like, mm-hmm. it feels almost, Blizzard skates a fine line between, like, we're going to make a lot of money and we're going to have a great value for our customers. And with Overwatch... I'm surprised more people aren't squawking about this because this is clearly like an over the Blizzard line. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like the worst in gaming history, but it's certainly it's Blizzard crossing a line that they set up saying like, this is how we're going to do business mm-hmm. and it's going to be 50% consumerism and 50% for our business bottom
line. You know, I'm wondering if possibly Overwatch isn't doing as well as they thought it was going to do. Like maybe they're not actually selling loot boxes and that's part of the problem is that they saw Hearthstone and saw the success of Hearthstone and even I would say to a certain extent Heroes of the Storm. But the difference with Heroes of the Storm is like I can go in and say I want to spend $7.99 on that specific skin. Mm-hmm.
It still doesn't explain.
I'm just wondering if maybe they're having trouble moving loot boxes and people are paying their initial whatever it is, 40, 50 bucks, I can't remember, to actually buy Overwatch, and then they're not actually caring what their characters look like. So they're not buying loot boxes. You know, whatever they open is fine. Yeah. I know most people that I've talked to, I know I personally, I think I bought one set of loot boxes, but it wasn't like the big set. I bought like the $20-ish set of loot boxes. And most of the people that I know either did the same thing I did. Maybe they bought the big pack of loot boxes, but they've only ever done it once.
I have not purchased anything in the game yet. But mm-hmm. I mean, if they structured this limited event-based content out better, like I was saying, like where you buy an Olympic loot box and you just get Olympic items, I would probably drop like $20. Like I go mid-range, similar to how I do Smite. When there's an event, I'm like, ooh, I really want to support the game. I'm gonna go mid-range, drop the $30 or $40 to get the mid-range gems, yeah, and then probably spend them all in the event. You know,
I would buy $30 or $40 worth of loot boxes, depending on how that pricing structure worked. But that's definitely something I would do. But right now, I don't feel like I want to go buy a chunk of loot boxes because there's the chance to have classic items. And I'm like, well, no, I really just want to have the Summer Games items. So
I want to earn, like, I want to,
or at least have whatever I'm putting my real money into have the effect of getting me the items that I want eventually, even if it's converting them to in-game currency at a lower rate. And then I have to save that up before I can go and buy what I want. It's taking away the ability to buy what you want that I think is the really big issue here. There's no kind of transfer in value between putting my real money down and what I get in the end. Like there's no path to get what I want.
I think it's just
random. Yeah. And I think that's the problem, is it's a problem on both ends, that there's random things in your loot boxes and then no way to convert that to something useful on the other side. So
yeah, it's those two issues that if fixed, I feel would really, and maybe like Blizzard doesn't even need to like bend over backwards to fix it for this specific event, but if they don't learn from this experience, and maybe our opinions, I don't know, I don't spend a lot of time on the internet these days besides the podcast and a little bit of research, but if this isn't the common tone of the internet for this specific event, and I could not see that being the case. I see people being a lot worse than us. If Blizzard doesn't learn from that feedback for the next event, then, you know, it's just like, I will probably continue to not put, because you're right, I'm not going to put money into something where I want to earn the classic stuff. I'm fine with earning the classic stuff, but if this like limited time event stuff, I want to be able to buy into that.
Well, and because then it's use a limited skins. Time.
Yeah, I want to use Tracer Olympics terribly during the Olympics. I don't want to be like that uncool kid who has an Olympic theme in Halloween. Yeah, that's not cool. It's cold outside.
Speaking of great places to put your money, check out bit.ly/amovestore. There's a whole bunch of really cool glassware there. Ryan, I have your order. I do. Also, I had my coffee out of an angry chicken mug this morning. So
was it extra angry?
Mugs. Oh, yeah, it was totally angry. Mostly that was just me burning my lips on my really hot coffee. But so basically you've got the Amove TV logo on one side. It's yellow and white, so it's really hard to see in the light. And then the logo of your favorite podcast on the other side of your mug, so you can show off your love of all things Amove TV. Again, that is bit.ly/amovestore. There's also some wine glasses and some pint glasses, which are on my shelf above me, but they're clear, so they're really hard to see. But I will make sure to show off something new on each episode of The Gamers Inn, because this stuff is really, really, really cool. So again, that is bit.ly/amovestore. Go there to support our wonderful network. Mm-hmm. Speaking of our wonderful network, this past weekend was CreateCon. What? It was super fun. We had myself, Garrett, Kyle, Dills, Jury, Tom Merritt. We had Brian Brushwood. There are so many fantastic panels. We actually kicked off the day doing a live episode of Gamers Inn, which will be on your audio feed. Unfortunately, there's about 25 minutes of audio that's missing in the middle.
Boom. That's unfortunate.
But it was almost a 2-hour long show. So
whoa. I caught the start and then the tail end because of the outage there, but
yeah,
that's
so
a good amount of content.
Yeah, we had quite a lot of content, so that will be going up onto iTunes, onto the audio feed. It will be episode 230. Basically, what we did is we had myself, Garrett, Kyle, and Dills just kind of sitting around shooting the shit about what our favorite video games were, and I made them pick things outside the Blizzard universe. So if you're looking to learn a little bit more about your favorite A-Move creators outside of the Blizzard universe, then make sure you check that out. Mm-hmm. And then we brought Tom Merritt up. We had a whole bunch of audience questions. And I think everyone, myself included, was a little bit tired at the start, but it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. So
it's nice that we were the icebreaker to kind of get things started. That's really cool.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. And there were a lot of really, really good questions, a lot of nostalgia going on, a lot of, you know, what was your favorite console growing up? If you wanted to see a remake of any game, what would it be? I'm trying to think of a couple of the other questions. But it was a really, really cool experience. I had a lot of fun. CreateCon in general was great. You should check out, I believe everything's going to be posted at amove.tv. But there was a really good couple of panels on just like how to podcast and the business of podcasting. Mm-hmm. So lots of really good advice from people who have been doing it a really long time. I learned some stuff and I think the audience really reacted well to it because it was basically the whole entire con was outside of the wheelhouse of what we normally do for shows because we had the option of audience participation. So there was a lot of real-time feedback, which made for a lot of really fun experiences and a lot of new information. And we got to see exactly what our listeners really want to hear about. So it was a lot of fun and a lot of really good questions. So we did live ITN, live Angry Chicken, live Gamers In.
Did they do Star Wars?
Let's Talk About Star Wars. Yeah, they did a Let's Talk About Star Wars. They did the Business of Podcasting. And there was a live Night Attack that I was pulled up on stage for that I had no idea that was happening. So basically I finished Angry Chicken.
Right.
I went in the other room. I sat down and I was like, I'm really glad that's over because what you guys, I don't know if I've actually talked about it very much on Gamers In, but growing up and to this day, I struggle with anxiety. I don't like talking in front of crowds. It's a whole different ballgame to sit and talk in front of your computer and your camera and to your friend. It's very one-on-one. Mm-hmm. But sitting like up on a stage and, you know, having to have opinions and essentially give speeches is just really out of my wheelhouse, and I struggle with it a lot. So I finished Angry Chicken and I was like, oh my God, I'm so happy I'm done for the day. Like, I'm so stressed. There were a couple autographs I had to sign. I was just sitting there talking to Dills, and I was like, I feel so much better now that it's all over. This is amazing. Like, I can just relax and go have some dinner. We'll have the after party. It'll be great. And then, so I went to go sit out in the audience, and probably about 10 or 15 minutes into the show, they started talking about like, oh, how many awkward white girls are in the crowd? And there's a couple of people that cheer. And he's like, well, we're going to bring up the ultimate awkward white girl, Jocelyn Moffat. And I was like, I was playing Pokemon. I wasn't even like,
see, you're the awkward white girl playing Pokemon in the crowd. You're just totally living up to your character.
Oh, man, the whole entire thing.
So did they have a bit planned, or did they just see you in the crowd like, okay, like we don't have anything planned for the show, let's make fun of Joss for like an hour? Is that Night Attack? Is that what happened?
There's a thing. Yeah, okay. There's a thing that you should all go watch because it was just incredibly ridiculous. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to say anything else because I don't want to spoil it, but yeah, that episode, not for me, just in general, the thing that we talked about was hilarious.
Okay. Well, I will check it out.
Yeah, there was no prep. I had no notes. And I am not an improv person. I'm not a drama person. I am very much a, where are my show notes? What are I talking about? Definitely not an improv comedy person. So I was 100% out of my element. But I think they got some good content. So
good.
Yeah.
I'm ecstatic that you guys had a great time, but also bummed that I was not able to be there. But again, super stoked that you guys had an amazing time, and I caught some of it on stream as I was working that day. And
you were just absolutely missed.
I watched it, and I got to see, like, I was getting updates from people on Twitter, and I was favoriting stuff as quickly as I could and retweeting like cool photos from the show. And yeah, I mean, to be up on stage with Garrett, Kyle, Tom, you, and Dills, just I think you guys were talking about the N64 at one point, yeah. Which is like the moment Ryan became a gamer was with that sort of console.
That was actually one of the questions was, you know, when did you first start to consider yourself a gamer? So again, it was a very good kind of get to know you, a lot of good nostalgia and a lot of really good stories about, you know, like us growing up and where we came from. So again, if you're interested in that, that is going to be episode 230 of The Gamers Inn. It's going to be the CreateCon live audio. Unfortunately, like I said, we are missing about 20 to 25 minutes in the middle of it, but we did get the majority of the show all together. I think it's about an hour and a half long. So overall, really, really good day.
The Gamers Inn has a weird issue with live shows. I think our Nerdtacular show had a bit of a garbled audio at the beginning.
This was literally like, I think someone either, I don't know if it was actually our like audio video producer guy or someone walking by, but somebody kicked the computer and the whole thing just went shoo.
No, yeah, I did. I was in the stream and I was watching it as it was like, I had to work that weekend, so I had it on the stream above here, and I'm like watching the stream. Then all of a sudden, it goes blank, and I check the chat room. It's like, is my iPad like malfunctioning or something? And it's like, no, chat room's going crazy. but the audio guy, I think, was doing a great job at letting the chat know that I think the computer had just gone kaput. And I was like, maybe that's just like the live stream, but no, unfortunately, it was the recording as well. But it sounded like I think I caught the tail end where it's like, this is the longest episode of Gamers Inn we've ever done. And I'm sure that's the case if it went 2 hours, especially if it was just like a conversation. But I'm sad that I missed it. I'm looking forward to hearing more about future CreateCons and future conventions. And I've never been out to Florida, so I'm due up for the sun at some point. And you know what? Caden will be a little bit older at that point, so we can loop in some more like family-friendly Disney stuff. You don't want to do Disney?
No.
Why? What happened? What was wrong with Disney?
You are not allowed to take your year and a half old son to Disney when he's not even going to remember it.
Oh, is that the thing?
Do it.
Okay. Well, then what am I supposed to do with him? Just leave him in the hotel? Crack a window, maybe?
That's fine.
So wait, are you saying that from the perspective of you don't want your parents to say to you when you're 10 and like, why didn't we go to Disney World? It's like, well, you did, son, when you were 1.5. You don't remember. Is that what you're getting at? Or did you actually have a 1.5 year old? No, what I'm getting at is
it's so crazy because, first of all, it is really, really, really hot. And I am an adult and I can keep track of my own like water intake and everything else. I can stay in the shade. But like, I was so incredibly uncomfortable. Then there's people with strollers because there's no way you can actually walk and carry a baby the whole day. You just can't.
So you're not on strollers?
People with strollers. You can have strollers, but you have to understand that when everyone has strollers and small children, it is a terrible, terrible experience for everybody. Like, nobody's happy.
Well, then maybe CreateCon 3 or whatever. We'll see.
And then on top of all of that, your kid's not going to remember anyway. He's not big enough to actually do anything. So then one of you, either yourself or Ashley, is going to have to sit out every single ride because you can't take the baby on a roller coaster.
He would be a year and a half at that point. Like, they can do stuff. Like, they can walk at that point, can't they?
But they're still teeny. They don't fit in any of the harnesses.
Oh, yeah, the rides.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, the funny thing is about having Caden is that the first 6 months of his life is like, he's a thing that doesn't move at all. You have to carry him around. Like, he's sort of, like, attached to you at all times unless you have him strapped into something. But, like, his sort of mode of transportation and the way he can move and the way he eats and just his entire life cycle is going to change at a certain point once he can start walking and stuff, and that might complicate things further, so we'll see.
It's perfectly fine to take like a 10-year-old because they're gonna remember, they can follow instructions, they're big enough that you don't lose them in a crowd. Like, this all makes sense. But people who take like babies up until I would say like 6 or 7 year olds, I'm just like, why? You're making a terrible experience for yourself and everyone else, and the kid's not even gonna remember.
It's true. Well, okay. Yeah, so maybe we'll we'll sort that out. But yeah, when he's older, definitely maybe move CreateCon to May or April.
Yeah, really.
Because I heard it was hot, but I heard the air conditioning was flowing and the convention went well. So congrats to Garrett and the A-Move team on rocking it. But yeah, sad I missed it, but I'm glad I was able to catch
little bits and pieces.
And I'm going to catch on the feed. I saw that TAC is up, ITN is up.
Yeah.
Garrett's been working like a FTP fiend.
Garrett is on point. So, so yeah, that's pretty much CreateCon in a nutshell. We did have a lot of people asking when the next one's going to be. There are plans and talks, but it's basically like everyone's just
happened last weekend.
This one. Exactly. And literally day of, people were saying, when's the next one? What's the plan? What are we doing? And we're just like, I don't know. Can I have my beer now?
Where's my coffee and my nap? Show.
But it was very successful. There were not a lot of hiccups. It was a really good time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, overall, I think potentially more CreateCons in the future. And so that means if you are listening to the sound of my voice and you like the A-Move TV network, maybe start saving your pennies now for a trip to Florida, because it was a really, really great time. And it was a small enough convention that, you know how much time that you got with people at Nerdtacular, for instance? This con is about 1/10 that size. So like the ratio of creator to person was probably like 1 to 5. Wow. So you had all these little like groups of people talking like one-on-one with creators and stuff, and or in some one-on-3 or 4 or 5, but in general, tons and tons and tons of access to your favorite creators. So just keep that in mind. I don't know when the next one's going to be, but something to keep in the back of your head if you want to come down and see us live and have some really cool conversations. Cool. Speaking of really cool conversations, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern, Ryan and I are going to have some really cool conversations over some games. We're going to do some streaming. So that it will be at twitch.tv/JossPlays tomorrow, Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern. I don't know 100% what we're going to play. We might jump into Overwatch and play some Lucio Ball, but who knows? You'll have to tune in and find out.
Yeah.
We wanted to take a moment here and thank our wonderful patrons. We have a new patron, Jason. Thank you so much for supporting us over at patreon.com/thegamersin. We are doing a monthly hangout because of you guys. We are fairly close to our goal of doing our patron game night, which basically gives you priority slots to come in and play games with us on the stream on Thursday nights. Mm-hmm. So again, that is patreon.com/thegamersin. And I think that is going to do it for us. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on A-Move TV with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, and The Angry Chicken. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at RMurphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/AMoveTV. You can also find the show on Facebook and Google+. If you'd like to email the show and let us know what you think about early access or your experiences with We Happy Few, we would love to hear from you at info@gamersinpodcast.com. So thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn. And remember, tune in next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.